So the title of the talk is The Contracted Mind and the Expanded Heart. And the contracted mind is, of course, the ordinary mind that is busy with interests. What I need, what I have, must have. What are my fears, how I respond to life, how I navigate through life, and it tends to be a lot of automatic reactivity to things based on survival, what I need to have and do, and also based on a kind of a self that's sitting in the middle of my life, running the show, the self saying, I need this, I need that, I need this, I need that, and the body needs this, and the body needs that, and the body needs that. So that's also part of the contraction, that life tends to be contracted into a self. And we really are there. I mean, we may think that, you know, we've been sitting on the meditation cushion for like 20 years, but if we remember how many small judgments we have all the time of success, for example, I did it, I'm good at it, I'm not good at it, failure, or just simply where we put our attention. When the bell rings for lunch, everybody puts their attention on their lunch. It's like, it's so automatic. Never mind if we've been sitting 20 years on retreats. This movement of success and failure, of having and losing, and being unhappy, and being wanting to be happy, and being unhappy, and the self in charge is a contracted place, is an automatic place. And of course, meditation tends to open this up. And we begin to become aware of all of that language inside us. And it can be a bit of a shock and a bit overwhelming to realize how much we're controlled by our needs and interests and ourself. And the meditation invites us to stop and take some responsibility for all that stuff going on inside us. To stop and look and see what's there, what's moving me, how am I reacting, what are the emotional music that's being played, what's my mind doing moment by moment, what's my heart doing moment by moment? What's the me doing moment by moment? What's the dramas? And vipassana, the word vipassana means to see clearly. Vipassana. Passana is seeing. V is seeing clearly, or ability to separate things, to clearly identify things. This is this and this is that. This is emotion of anxiety. This is an emotion of non-anxiety. Just to be able to sort of look at things clearly and see what we're made of and what all this process is about. So it's vipassana is a sort of insight into the truth of our experience moment by moment, and the truth of ourselves, the self. And vipassana tends to be very much about being open to what is, and not changing things too much, but to allow ourselves to see and be aware of what is actually happening in this field of from here to here, and maybe here. But there's another word that's very much part of what we're doing. The word is bhavana. And bhavana is more like cultivation or development, or like cultivating the soil in planting seeds in order to grow useful plants and beautiful plants. It's really more about being much, not being a witness, but being a developer or a cultivator or a gardener. A gardener of helpful, useful, beneficial, harmonious movements within the self. So it's doing a bit of a repair job, or should we say a gardening job, in which we do take out some of the weeds and we plant more helpful plants. And there is another word in the Pali which is really important in the Dharma, which is called kusala and akusala. And kusala means what is wholesome, what is healthy, what is, brings harmony, what brings peace, what brings a joy, what brings qualities of freedom in us. And akusala is being what is, again, the contracted self, the needs, the automat and the difficulties and the confusions. So we're not entirely in the realm of just being with as things as they are, vipassana, but we're also not entirely in the realm of development, and we're somewhere in between. So that's important to realize, because sometimes we say, well, meditation is just about being with what is. Yes and no. But on the other side, if it was all our practice was just trying to redo ourselves to kind of, then it means inside there we've got a lot of assumptions of having to repair things. Tikkun. If we're busy development planting, in the end up we're being obsessive gardeners, weeding all the time the weeds that we don't like, and trying to plant new plants, not always successful. So it's somewhere in between. And the a metta retreat is very much reminding us that we can develop qualities in us that are helpful. And that's why it's a bit different from vipassana. But not, again, it's in this middle territory. So it's not so different, because the heart messages of feeling life are going to be there all the time streaming through us. They're all the time our feeling life is playing a music inside us. And generally it's that music of I don't like this and I do like that and I want this and this is interesting and that's not interesting and this person I'm very happy with and this person I don't want to go near and all of that stuff. That's the heart. It is constantly talking. So it's there anyway. And generally the heart is captured by the self and its contracted interest. And one of the places, or the main place that we can develop kusala, something wholesome, is to actually change the music of the heart so that it's less akusala, giving us less trouble, problems, negativities, to change the music or the color of the heart from fears and concerns and issues and needs, and to replant new seeds. And another slight problem is that because the heart is often so full of negative messages like fears, anxiety, or anger, or pain, that often we actually push it, we shut it up. And so we may find that the language of the heart is a little bit hidden from us. And we're more, especially in the West, we're more used to the language of the mind. And we're a mind culture. The West is a mind culture. And we're actually the language of mind and thought and concept is our language. I notice it with my grandchildren. Anytime the grandchildren say something clever, everyone goes, "Ooh!" But if grandchildren go cry and laugh, nobody's worried. It's just emotion. Never mind. We tend to sort of shut down emotional life because of pain that we've experienced in our life. Especially, I must say, a male problem, but not only. Tends to be a male problem. This shutdown. So, we're in this retreat developing the antidotes. And the antidotes are loving kindness and the Brahma Viharas. The Brahma Viharas are, it's from Sanskrit. Vihara is a, those of you who've been to India know the word. Vihara is a place to stay. It's a temple where you can stay, or a palace, sometimes translated as a palace, or a good guest house, shall we say, can be called Vihara. And Brahma is God, is the God realms. So Brahma Vihara is the realm or the palaces of the gods. It can be like in the Christian world, you very often use the word the kingdom of heaven. That's what's used in Christianity. In Jewish mysticism, it would be kiseh kavod, the kiseh of Elohim, the image of heaven, some place to live, which is heavenly, which is shmeini, is that heavenly? Yeah. And it really is the sense of the being have the best dira that you can possibly have in Tel Aviv, the penthouse right up there, you know. This is a place to live. And it's important, it's not stam that this is used, this language is used by the Buddha, that he took it from Sanskrit and he used it, because the Brahma Viharas are a way to live. They are a lived experience. They're not just a wisdom, which is useful, but apply. It's a way that sweetens our whole existence. So it's a heart flow, that in that heart flow, this is the way we can live. This is the palace which we don't need a penthouse. We don't need any flat at all. We can have the most miserable little, because they're concrete, box somewhere in the miserable city of Israel or India. It doesn't that, because we're living in a palace. And the palace is the palace of the heart. And then who cares how expensive is your dira? The four Brahma Viharas are firstly metta, which is translated as loving kindness, that everyone breaks their head to try and translate into Hebrew, and nobody can. But, you know, there's a whole collection of words that you can use: friendliness, kindness, sympathy, warmth, and so on. The second is karuna, which is compassion. The third is mudita, which is joy, sympathetic joy, joy at life, at just the basis of life, joy at any joy that arises, being full of joy. And the fourth is equanimity, balance, steadiness, just groundedness, which balances the other three. The other three, without the ground, can get a bit wild. So, the way we're cultivating it is in some way changing the inner climate so that it becomes a place that we can live in moment by moment. I want to read a sutta, a piece from a sutta which is very much describing how this is a lived experience. Quite a well-known piece where the Buddha was walking around and he met three monks. And they were really shining with they were just shining with so much energy of peace and love. And he said, "You guys are doing really well. How is it? How do you live with each other?" And I'll quote one of them, Aniruddha. He replied, "Surely, sir," to the Buddha, "we are living in harmony with appreciation of each other. Without any disputes, we blend like milk and water, and we look at each other with kind eyes." Isn't it beautiful? And then the Buddha said, "And how do you live like that?" And the answer is, "As to that, the way I think," this is the monk saying, "it is a benefit for me, it is a great benefit for me that I am living with such friends in the spiritual life. I maintain bodily acts of loving kindness towards those respected monks, both openly and privately. I maintain verbal acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately. I maintain mental acts of loving kindness towards them, both openly and privately." In other words, like I said day before yesterday, body, speech, and mind are employed with loving kindness. "I consider, why should I not set aside what I wish to do and instead do what these honored monks wish to do? And then I do set aside what I wish to do and do what they wish to do. We are different in body, sir, but we are one in mind." The other two monks, Nandiya and Kimbila, and each spoke the same way, and they added, "This is how, sir, we are living in harmony, with mutual appreciation, without disputing, blending like milk and water, and looking at each other with kind eyes." So what we're doing, the cultivation is the change, specific change that we're moving towards, is to change the language of the heart from its usual language or frequent language of blaming or of being embarrassed or shamed or being afraid or anxious or being angry or irritated or being self-interested or wanting this and not wanting that, and changing that language of the heart to loving kindness. And it's not so difficult, because in some way or other that language is already there also. And where we started this retreat with appreciation, and appreciation is already in us. Every one of us appreciates something. Ma'arich, values. And appreciation, dafka, is a good word in English, because it also, it's not only aracha, but it's also noticing. It has both in the English word. I appreciate something means I notice it. So we start with really something very, very much that we already have, with appreciation, with being okay, with a sense of, I'm okay here. fundamentally the seder, everything's okay. And that's there in us, in every one of us. We may have messages occasionally, the negative, we may go down, we may have our fears, but we're like the toy that goes down and comes up again. Numi kumi, dumi kumi, taku nakum taku. We're there, we do have that. And so it's talking to a place we already have, but needs to be flowered, it needs to flower in us more, to be grown more. We need to give it water and food and attention. And the way we do it is very simply being okay with what comes up in our experience. Being kind to ourselves. What comes up is whatever needs to come up. Any thought, any feeling, even pain in the body, it needs to come up. We are okay with that. That's our life. So it's that reminder, appreciating what happens, what is our life, as a kind of a place to live inside us. It's sometimes the word acceptance, Kabbalah, is used, but we have to be careful with that word, because it's not exactly Kabbalah, because Kabbalah implies or acceptance implies, oh well, can't, like the English say, when you meet English people in the rain and you ask them how are you, they say, mustn't grumble. Really, on the street, you go to London and you ask people how are you, they say, mustn't grumble. It's like, I'm not allowed to complain, really. And that means I have to accept what I don't really want. But here we're not saying that. We're going another stage. We're saying, notice what is. What is harmony in us? What is kusala? What is okayness? A fundamental okayness. And that's beyond acceptance. It's just being it. And it's inside the knowing. Because when we look at something, we have a heart relationship to it. It's impossible to have knowing without any heart. Impossible. Because we're humans and we're not a computer or a machine. So any knowing will have heart in it. Even the paying attention. What is paying attention? It's the heart saying to us, go there. So the heart is always talking, along with the mind. They go together, like in Yodim, in the language of Tanakh, Safa Tanakhi. Yodim is also making love and knowing. Same word is knowing and loving. So it is in the knowing. And our practice is to allow the heart to be there, to talk, to be pay attention, that is to bring it up, not to push it down, not to hide it, but to allow it to be open, to allow the heart language, and to remember to be kind, to remember kusala, to be okay with things. That's the reminder, that's the cultivation. And you will have heard it already in one day so many times from the Bama here. A reminder, because that does need reminding. When you have a pain in the body, so easy to go, oh, it's no good, or I want to get rid of it, or I always have this pain, or it's difficult, and I'm no good, and I can't meditate, and, you know, the heart leading to blame, or the heart leading to negativity. You need the reminder sometimes. Wait a minute. Things are okay. Just put in perspective. There's an okayness. The life is here. So we have to be careful that in our practice we don't deny the heart. that sometimes our practice, meditation practice, spiritual practice, can get dry. And we do have to be careful about this, especially if we go too far into certain kinds of Buddhist practice, which are can be rather technical. Mahasi-style practice can get rather technical. Mindfulness can be very breaking the mind into moments of perception and really being mind, developing mind power and forgetting the heart. And sometimes it can go too far. I think sometimes the Goenka retreats go a bit too far with that, and people can suffer afterwards because they feel they don't have contact with their own emotions, because this practice can get us to dried up. Or it can be, practice can be too religious, and then the heart is lost there as well. I remember many years ago, we were doing a lot of peace walks with Israeli Jews and Arabs and sometimes Palestinians. And on one peace walk, we were walking through Wadi Ara, and there was maybe 60 people from the Dharma, from the Buddhist community, and others, and also Israeli Arabs. And we were walking for a few days through along Wadi Ara, silent walking and stopping on the way. So at some point in the middle of the walk, we came to a kind of a site, an area, which was a kind of a play area for kids. And there was a music band playing, a rock band for kids, and there was like 500 Arab kids there from Wadi Ara, from all the schools, Arab schools. There were like 500 kids, and there was little models of how traditional Palestinian village life, how you squeeze the olives and so on, and the kids were there looking at all these different things. There was such excitement and energy. The kids were so noisy, it was incredibly noisy, and the kids were excited and laughing and running around and having a great time, and the energy was like this. And I was so touched by the energy, by the high energy and the joy of these Arab kids that were giving a different message. Like, to me, they were giving a message that life starts with joy. Never mind what happens later, that their difficulties, the communities, the culture, the conflicts and so on. But children are naturally joyful. Never mind who they are, where they are. And actually I started to cry from this energy of joy. And one of the meditators, the Buddhists, came to me and said, and saw that I had tears. And he said, "Yes, it's a terrible place. So much noise. I know that you're really needing silence." He just got it completely wrong. My heart was just bursting with joy and tears of joy. And he thought I was being a real Buddhist needing silence. Too much noise here. Just a small example that came up. So we have to be careful not to be too religious about our practice. The greatest spiritual teachers are those that can cry and laugh. They are not, you'll never find great teachers. That Dalai Lama is bubbling with heart. And one minute he can cry, and next minute he can laugh, and he's just so full of the bubbles of the heart. And other teachers too, they're not dry. The Dalai Lama said, in relation to religion, he said, "This is my simple religion. There is no need for temples. There is no need for complicated philosophy. Our own mind and our own heart are our temples, and the philosophy is kindness. And there was a quote, there's a quote from Heschel, Avraham Yeshua Heschel, that said, "When I was young, I admired clever people. Now that I am old, I admire kind people." Giving the importance to the heart to as leading us. So, as we practice here together, we're not only allowing the heart more space and the goodness in the heart, the okayness, the appreciation. With that, we reduce control. We reduce the sense of me in the center of things. We reduce it, the heart naturally participates with the world. When we see a tree, if we're too busy, the ordinary mind, the heart is shut off and we don't notice the tree. If we're too much being in the mind, we will define the tree as a Eitz Orim or brush. But if we're developing the appreciation, we will just appreciate the tree. And appreciating the tree is appreciating ourselves. Because the heart is a participator. The heart actually doesn't know addresses. The heart is just the heart. We had here family retreats year after year. We had family retreats, and we did some mindfulness games there. And I found a nice game which we were doing with the children. Sent the children out to look at trees and look at bushes, and notice what is good and interesting about the tree or the bush that they see, and then come back to the circle and then say what they noticed about the tree that is interesting and good and significant for them. But instead of saying the tree is very tall, the tree is, they replace the word tree with I am. Beautiful game for kids. I am tall. I have colored skin. I have leaves going like this. Or my leaves are very small and delicate. You know. So, the heart, when you appreciate things, you automatically include yourself. Because there's less control. We may need, and this is something that might come up and we'll talk about it, we may need to understand that there can be resistance, there can be the voices that come and say, "Mapitom, I don't appreciate, I am the voice of the self. I'm angry with my mother, but don't tell me to appreciate my mother, please." There can be resistance, okay. There can be opposite feelings when you suggest kindness, there can be anger instead. Because we can't exactly control, and we don't want to control. The image from the tradition, which is a very nice image, is that every drop of kindness is like a drop of cool water, and it can drop on a hot plate, and the hot plate is all our burning needs and desires and issues and so on, and the cool water of the kusala, the harmonious music of the heart, drops on the hot plate and goes psh, there's a reaction. And the reaction can be anger. And the reaction can be negativity. Because it's creating something. It's making a change. It's stimulating something. When you say appreciation, you can imagine how it can stimulate the opposite, maybe. And that's the psh. But slowly, slowly, it works. And drop by drop, it cools the hot plate. And there's less reaction. And we begin to allow more appreciation, more kindness. And and in some way or other, it's okay to have resistance. Because it's real. And we can actually find often our place to expand love when we notice resistance. The resistance can help us to actually notice where to go with love. Like, for example, we can have barriers to, and we do have barriers to our kindness. We can say, I love, we can feel, most of us do. Well, I love, but only these people who are close to me and those I absolutely don't. I love my family, but not the neighbor whose television is blaring day and night. I love and I'm happy with my people, but not those on the other side of the border. I'm friendly with this group, but I'm not friendly with that group. So we can always have limits on our love and friendliness. And if we notice those limits, that's a place where we can develop our love. We can say, yeah, wait a minute. Can I look at the neighbor who I don't like for all these years, who's making a terrible noise in this television? Can I look at him with kindness? We notice where we are blocked, and that's a place to go to develop. And we will be doing the practices, exactly those practices, starting tomorrow morning. And so love can actually grow, or kindness or metta can grow through overcoming resistance. When we notice resistance, that's where it can grow. Just like we need resistance or to walk. We couldn't walk without resistance on the floor. It helps us to actually move. So it's, we move with resistance. Because of resistance, we can see where to go. And gradually, the heart begins to melt barriers, melt resistance, melt the controlling self, and expanding our boundaries. And that's why they're called divine, the Brahma Viharas. That's why they're the Brahma, the divine realms, because they're expanded, because we can't measure them. The heart, it cannot be measured. You can just spread out, and love just flows, and it's not measurable. It doesn't have a ruler where we can say how much love. It's just spreading, it's just in it, and it doesn't have addresses. It's very open. Love to ourselves will automatically go out to others. Love to others will automatically go to ourselves. Love is just flowing beyond boundaries and beyond measurement. And that's why it's awakening. So we can awaken through the Brahma Viharas, just as we can through the consciousness. It's the same. And the reason is that the awakening is when the boundaries of the self are dissolved and there is a total and intimate interconnection with everything. And it can happen through the love or through the consciousness. And usually through both. The Buddha said, There's no better mindfulness in this world, no better way to live in this world than the practice of metta, and it's a path to awakening. So, I invite you all in this retreat and in your life, because it's a lived, it's a place to live, it's a maze, divine penthouse up there, it's a place to live. So I invite you all to live like that, here in this retreat and in your future lives, to really live with the uncontracted heart that is flowing freely and filling ourselves and the world with the energy of love, of joy, of compassion, and of equanimity. Thank you. So we'll take a couple of minutes quiet.